Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
But we're going to talk about sweat now, because I think we don't talk enough about sweat. And I'm joined by Dr. Aoife Moran from the School of Chemical Sciences in DCU. Welcome, Aoife.
Hi, Brendan. Thanks for having me on.
Aoife, before we get into sweat, I was looking at the work you're doing in DCU. It's fascinating. So you look at the gases in the atmosphere produced by bodies.
Yes, exactly. So really a lot of the sweat that we produce, or at least the excretions from our glands, produce these what we call volatile compounds or gases. And the types of those compounds that we can detect can start to tell us a little bit about what's going on inside the body.
OK, so if we work our way up to what sweat and these excretions tell us about our own health, right? But so a few basics. Yep. Why do we sweat?
Why do we sweat? Well, it's Mother Nature's answer to thermoregulation, keeping our maintaining a constant temperature within our body. So I'm not talking about the surface temperature, the temperature of our skin. I'm talking about the core temperature inside, internal to our body. And the reason we sweat is because that is a response by the brain to any increase in that core temperature. So once the brain starts detecting an increase, we might be exercising, we might be in hot weather. What happens is it sends out a couple of responses for the body to regulate itself, one of those being a sweat response. And that sweat response itself doesn't actually cool us down, but it's when the sweat reaches our skin and starts to be vaporized from the skin, so is evaporated from the skin, that's where we start to lose heat as well, because that process takes energy. And that energy is a form of heat. So we lose that heat as the sweat starts to evaporate.
Okay, so it's not the actual liquid of the sweat cooling down the surface kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then we don't have to be exercising or warm to sweat, like people sweat when they're nervous.
Yeah. So they call it cold sweat. So being on the Brendan O'Connor show sends me into a cold sweat, for example.
You're doing swimmingly. You're cool as a breeze there. I wouldn't have thought there was anything going on.
Yeah. So what happens there is, again, when we get nervous, when we're in pain, we're stressed, we move into what we call the fight or flight response.
Okay.
And that sends messages out from the brain, to do things to our body to, again, regulate our body, to bring it back to normal. Those types of things are increasing our heart rate, increasing our breathing pattern, and also a release of sweat, mostly from the apocrine glands, which is under the arms, mostly, is where we will generate this cold sweat, that we call it.
And then what Joey from Friends infamously called the meat sweats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the meat sweats is another type of sweating.
Is the meat sweats officially recognised in the scientific community?
It happens. We mightn't call it meat sweats, Brendan, but this happens when we eat maybe a very a protein-rich meal or a heavy meal, sometimes late at night, and it's particularly hard to digest. So our body has to actually work extra hard to digest that food, and in doing so, starts to release heat. Again, our core temperature increases, and these responses like heart rate increases, and also sweating happens to try and regulate back to our homeostasis, as it's called.
And come here, what's in the sweat? Is it just salty water, or like, because sometimes you feel like it smells poisonous, like in some situations, and you know.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things going on to give sweat its odour. But first of all, the sweat that we emit or secrete from most parts of our body is called a crine sweat, and that's mostly water and some salts mixed in. There is the other type of sweat, maybe the sweat glands that are mostly activated under cold sweat, but also under for thermoregulation, are the apocrine glands, and they're
Where is that?
They're under the arms, in the groin, even in the ear canal, actually, hairy bits essentially.
Okay.
So they release a different type of composition of sweat, and that will have the water, it'll have the salts, but it'll also have some proteins and some lipids in it. Now, it's not the sweat itself, whether it's the apocrine sweat or the acrine sweat. It's not the sweat itself that has an odour. what happens is there's bacteria all over our skin, and the bacteria use this to as nutrients. They metabolize the whatever's in the sweat, and they themselves then emit metabolites that have a smell. And that's what gives the sweat, or what we know as body odor.
Okay. This is a lovely conversation.
I know, it's lovely, isn't it?
So come here. I often wonder, are we, like this unscientific, are we kind of sweating out toxicity as well? Like, for example, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes if the show here is a bit more stressy or a bit more adrenaline or whatever involved, I take my shirt off afterwards and it would knock you over.
Yeah.
But like a completely different kind of sweat. It just feels like poison.
Yeah. So that will just be the types of bacteria, how hungry they are maybe, the volume of sweat that you've secreted, the areas in which sweat has been produced.
So we're not releasing toxins in
terms of toxins, I mean, some of my research is around the hypothesis that there are some toxins in particularly apocrine sweat or from sebaceous glands, actually, that aren't involved in the sweat process. But typically, even if they're present, they're present in very, very low concentrations. And really, we rely on other organs like our kidneys and liver for toxin clearance from our body. And they're great.
So then a lot of people then say, we're jumping around here now, but that begs the question of people who go to a sauna,
which I
don't quite get what the point is, right?
Yeah.
But people seem to think they are like releasing toxins by sweating a lot in a sauna.
So there's lots of reasons to go for saunas. I, for one, absolutely love a good sauna.
Why?
But what the health benefit probably isn't around this toxin elimination that people might think it is. It's around, again, increasing the body core temperature and increasing the dilation of our blood vessels.
Okay.
So that happens if we do that regularly enough, whether it be by saunas or maybe exercise, we lower our blood pressure because we increase the diameters of our blood vessels. That lowers our blood pressure in our body. So that is really the health benefit, and that has obviously health benefits from the heart point of view, even from neuro disease points of view. So although it's not good for, it's probably not clearing toxins from our body, it has a lot of health benefits. And, you know, if you like it, do it.
Okay. But you're not sweating stuff out like people think they're sweating
the
bad stuff.
No.
There's
no evidence.
If people
for that.
Get one lesson from today.
Yeah.
Now, look, all the texts are obviously about people asking about excessive sweating, what causes it, medication, is it hormonal, whatever. What kind of, why do some people sweat a lot?
So there's lots of reasons why someone might have hyperhidrosis, is what excessive sweating is called medically. Now, a lot of it is still within the normal spectrum. So excessive sweating essentially means your sweat glands are workaholics, if you like. They're working when you don't need them to. So that can cause lots of distress for people, and it's uncomfortable for people, but it's still within the normal spectrum most of the time. There are, however, small set of circumstances where excessive sweating and probably some other effects that you're going to have, or symptoms at least, are going to be reflective of maybe something else going on in the body, whether it be related to the heart or something. So if somebody has that hyperhidrosis or feels they might have it, you know, the best advice is go and see your GP. The majority of time it is absolutely normal. And there's medications, there's prescription antiperspirants, there's even Botox procedures to help people with it if they can't manage it with current lifestyle changes.
Okay.
So it is
probably nothing, but check it out. But it is
absolutely
manageable.
Absolutely.
I think it does cause people a lot of discomfort and distress and stuff like that, isn't it?
So go see your GP for sure.
Yeah. And another texter asking, are there people who don't sweat? Well, there's one we know of, Prince Andrew.
Yeah, Prince
Babies
Andrew.
Don't sweat either, do they?
So it's very rare to
you've been very diplomatic here,
as an adult. You know, often it might only come about because of surgery. So yeah, so let's leave Prince Andrew aside.
Okay.
Babies themselves don't have, newborns don't have their sweat glands activated, so they can't thermal regulate very easily, certainly not as well as us, which is why we're always being told about newborns and not overheating them and so on. They start to develop their sweat glands quite early in life, as early as 2 weeks actually, but they become much more efficient and we train our sweat glands and we activate more and more sweat glands as we age. So babies have sweat glands, but they're not activated, but they start activating, they start kicking in reasonably early in life.
Okay, so we don't need to worry ourselves overly about that. So then, what can sweat tell us about our health?
Yeah, so cystic fibrosis, for example, is diagnosed through a sweat test because there's elevated levels of sodium actually in the sweat of somebody who has cystic fibrosis. Those tests then cannot be done until enough sweat can be produced by that body, which is typically around 2 weeks to a month. Tests like that will be done. But other things around hydration, we know we can look at through sweat testing. Stress levels can be detected through sweat quite easily, through cortisol can be present in sweat. We look at different types of glands through the body in our own research.
Yeah.
So we look at more the sebaceous glands and what they produce. And they produce a kind of more interesting matrix of...
Sebaceous gland gives you spots, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. They produce the oils and the fats and keep our skin actually very moisturised. So they tend to be those glands tend to be distributed with the eccrine glands that produce the water-based sweat. They mix together. The bacteria just love this mixture. They gorge on it. So between us understanding the sebaceous, the eccrine and the bacteria, we start to think about being through the volatile profile that this gives or the gas profile that's emitted.
Yeah.
We can start thinking about things like skin disease for a start. So can we look at different skin diseases or detect changes or flare-ups within skin diseases with the signatures that we're seeing? And, you know, as research goes on and time goes on, we're starting to understand much more about, first of all, the brain-gut axis, and the skin microbiome is actually starting to be more understood.
Okay. And it is the largest organ in the body,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of exciting stuff coming down the tracks potentially.
And it's obviously super accessible, much more so than the gut or the brain, obviously.
Okay. Yeah. And listen, people are obsessed with sweat. There's so many texts here. We'll have to come back to this. But anyway, that was fascinating. Dr. Aoife Moran, thank you so much. We'll take a break.